I feel that we're such at the tip of this. I don't know if a lot of people are thinking about it or even aware of what we're heading into. I'm not sure how many people have the wavelength or the bandwidth to focus on what's happening here, if they even understand what 2026 is going to bring.
Welcome to the Vermont Conversation. I'm David Goodman. The healthcare apocalypse has arrived. Starting in late October, many of the 30,000 Vermonters who get their health insurance through Vermont Health Connect, also known as the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare, have been experiencing sticker shock. Average health insurance premiums on Vermont Health Connect are projected to double in the new year, the highest rate increases in the country. This is a disaster foretold. For months, Democrats in Congress warned that unless pandemic-era health insurance subsidies were extended, the 24 million Americans who get their health insurance through Obamacare marketplaces would see astronomical price hikes. Despite a 43-day government shutdown, Republicans in Congress and President Trump refused to extend subsidies. The price tag for inaction has just arrived. Families are now faced with excruciating choices, with many now considering going without health insurance. If too many people drop coverage, experts warn that Vermont's struggling healthcare financing system could enter a death spiral and collapse. On this week's Vermont Conversation, we will look at the healthcare affordability crisis that is confronting one family. Erica Bronze lives with her two children and husband in Winooski. Later in the program, we'll be joined by Michael Fisher, Vermont's chief healthcare advocate. Erica Bronze and Mike Fisher, welcome to the Vermont Conversation.
Thank you.
Good to be here.
Erica, let's just start by having you introduce yourself, what you do, where you live, tell us about your family.
Yeah, great. So my name's Erica. I live in Winooski. We've been here for about 21 years. Right now I have a daughter at home who's 17 and a husband who I also live with. And for work, I teach Pilates and movement therapy. I have my own business. I've done that for 25 years. So I teach privates and group classes, and I also teach teacher trainings around New England.
And how long have you lived in Vermont?
Well, I was born here, moved away for a little bit, and then I've been back for the last 21 years.
And I think you mentioned your husband is a healthcare provider.
Yes, my husband's a physician. He also has his own business. He's been in practice for also 25 years. He practices in Winooski, a small clinic that he owns and runs.
So tell us about the situation you are finding yourself in right now regarding your health insurance.
Yes, I'm finding myself in a very agonizing and worrisome situation. For this past year, for 2025, we have been paying $1,100 a month for our health plan. And then on top of that, we have a deductible of about $15,000. So that's what we've been paying this year, and we can make that work. That's okay. We can do that. We have not used anywhere near close to our deductible, so we're not using the system very much. But it's nice to have the knowledge that if something were to happen, we could go to the hospital and get treated. It does feel expensive, but we've been making it work. Going forward into 2026, I have the numbers here. Our monthly cost would increase to $2,700 a month. That is $32,400 per year on top of a deductible of $15,200. So just add that up. That's $47,600 per year prior to help kicking in from the insurance company. So that is basically a second mortgage on a house. That even though, we've been running our own businesses for all these years, relatively financially comfortable, we cannot afford $47,000 for healthcare. It's about 25% of our annual income. And I will also make the point that we do not really use the system very much. So we are healthy, we're relatively young. We hardly ever go to the hospital, the doctor. I mean, we are the kind of people that folks want paying into the system. We are not taking from the system. We are subsidizing the system, which we're happy to do. We're happy to pay our fair share. We're happy to care for our neighbors, but not when it's impossible for us. We can't take out a second mortgage on our house to afford 1 year of health insurance. It's just
And
impossible.
what is the policy that you have? Is it on the ACA marketplace?
Yeah, it's the Blue Cross Blue Shield Bronze CDHP plan.
Okay, so this is a very common plan for many Vermonters have. It is not by any stretch the Cadillac plans that are
No, it's
available.
actually the lowest
Yeah,
tier.
yeah. So does is there any so you're talking about going from 1100 a month to 2700 a month.
Correct.
What are you thinking right now? How are you going to
Well,
do
we
this?
that's it's you know, it's simply like I said, I mean, I don't think it makes financial sense to take out a second mortgage on our house to pay for 1 year of health insurance. So we're, at this point, we're at right now getting all of our physicals done. We're trying to get checked out in every way we possibly can to see if we're in good shape to jump and have 2026 without any health insurance.
So you're going to drop health insurance.
Unless something shows up in the next couple of months of some serious issue, and then we'll try to resource from friends and family to try to afford our premium and deductible. But like I said, I mean, we're trying to get all the scans done and just make sure we're tip-top healthy before we make the leap, because I can't tell you how much sleep I've lost. Considering what it's like to jump in this day and age to no healthcare for a family. I have a daughter. I want to make sure that I'm taking good care of her. I don't want to have some accident happen and for us to be sitting and wondering, should we go to the hospital? Can we afford to go to the hospital? Maybe we shouldn't go to the hospital. In the meantime, that's our health and our life at stake. What decision do you make at that time? What decision do you make?
How is all this making you feel?
Oh, well, I've had lost a lot of sleep, and I thought to myself, oh no, I'm going to give myself an ulcer, and then I'm not going to have health insurance to help me treat the ulcer. I mean, I don't have an ulcer, but I mean, it's been top of mind. It's been top of mind ever since they voted to, start the government up again and kind of, slid into what's looking like we're going to lose the tax credits. It's been top of mind, high anxiety, very stressful, very worrisome.
Who do you hold responsible for this?
Wow. That's a great question. I want to say that I really do believe in so much good work that's happening here in Vermont. I think people are really trying. I think in general, like the big picture answer is just greed. I think wealthy people and corporations think that money seems to be more important than people, and losing perspective on what it's actually like, to be kind of a regular person that doesn't have a lot of money who's trying to survive. I think that something happens when you have a lot of money and you have a lot of power, and you just get greedy and you forget about, your other people and humans in the country. And so I don't know, it seems to be this human condition of greed and power.
You occupy a rather unusual place in your family. Your husband's a physician, so he is also on that side of the ledger, probably dealing with a lot of patients who are in the exact position that he himself is in. What, just how do you wrap your head around that?
Well, I'm not sure if this answers that question, but I'll say that, my husband is a primary care provider. He's obviously, I'm biased. I think he's a wonderful physician. And his major struggle in his practice is dealing with insurance companies, is getting nickel and dimed by insurance companies as a primary care physician who's trying to make a living, doing good in the community. It's like he's practicing medicine with one hand tied behind his back because he's constantly getting pushed and questioned about, the labs that he chooses to run or the tests he chooses to do, trying to keep people in good health. So there's also that perspective of if it's really challenging to be a primary care physician battling against the bureaucracy of the insurance company. That's
Is
our
he
that's you.
worried that a lot of his patients, like his own family, is going to just bail on health insurance?
I feel that we're such at the tip of this. I don't know if a lot of people are thinking about it or even aware of what we're heading into. I'm not sure how many people have the wavelength or the bandwidth to focus on what's happening here, if they even understand what 2026 is going to bring. I feel like the conversations are not yet happening in the community. We just began open enrollment period. People are kind of starting to maybe see what's happening, but I feel like conversations like this hopefully will help people realize this is a very serious challenge that's going on, and we need to, I'm not sure what to figure out, but I feel like we're not quite on the tipping point where it's really top of mind for most people in the community. Just at the beginning of this process.
Well, let's bring Mike Fisher into the conversation. And Mike, just explain the role that you play in the whole healthcare and healthcare advocacy system.
Sure. My name is Mike Fisher. I am the healthcare advocate, which is a position and an office defined in statute to be a watchdog and an advocate for Vermonters, generally fighting for Vermonters to have better access to care.
So,
Coverage is a really basic component of access to care, insurance coverage. And so I just having just listened to Erica tell her story, I just want to honor just how devastating this is for you, Erica, and for so many Vermont families who are, you're right, either at this moment having sleepless nights trying to figure out what to do about it, or soon come. And it comes, there's a whole bunch of us. I just want to mention, about 30,000, 30 some thousand Vermonters lost their Medicare Part C plans. It's a different set than this conversation here. But many of them are moving in, forced to move into a significantly more expensive coverage option. And there's 30 some thousand, 32,000 or so Vermonters on the individual market. The market that Erica's talking about. The vast, vast majority of them get premium tax credits now, and everyone is going to experience a decrease, some very small decrease in their subsidies, and some sizable decreases, increases in their costs that are just undoable. Not doable. And I have a tremendous fear that what we are watching before us is the undoing, the dismantling of our healthcare financing system. And I guess for those who might be listening, thinking, man, I'm glad that's not me. I got employer-sponsored insurance, or I'm in a different category somehow. We don't get to do this one on our own. This system only works if the financing system works. And so our hospitals are dependent on it. Our providers on all sides are dependent on this system working. And I have a healthy fear that what's before us is going to have a pretty significant impact for everybody seeking care here in Vermont.
Well, let's back up for a moment. When the analyses began coming out over the last few months of where the price hikes, the insurance premium hikes were going to be biggest, there was a multicolor map of the United States that I saw in the New York Times. And Vermont is this like dark outlier. It had the darkest shading to indicate the highest insurance premiums in the country. Why are we such an outlier, Mike?
On some level, I'm afraid people in positions like mine make it too complicated. There's a lot of factors. There's a lot of things we don't know. But the bottom line is our prices are too high. And I want to differentiate a little bit here. Hospitals have been able to, over the last number of years, increase their commercial charges year over year. That leads to higher premiums. And then we at the insurance company, and we all complain about our insurance companies. The hospitals have enjoyed this complex system where we are angry at our insurance company for the costs, even though the lion's share of those premium dollars go to covering Vermonters' healthcare needs, paying the claims for the care we get. Look, I've never run a hospital. I don't pretend to know how to run a hospital. But I can say with confidence that Vermont hospitals are expensive compared to their peers nationally. Let me recognize there's 14, 15 Vermont hospitals. I shouldn't paint them all with one brush. There are ones that are doing a better job than others. Significantly on average, Vermont is spending is our costs are too high, our prices are too high. They're outstripping our ability to pay for it.
So we often hear the explanation, the simple explanation that why it's so expensive here with healthcare, as with other things, is that Vermont is the population is old, and we're old and small. There's not enough of us, and it's an old popula relatively old population. Is it that simple?
I don't think it's that simple. I think those are factors. We can't ignore them. Those are real factors. It's harder to provide good care in a rural state like Vermont, within a reasonable driving distance. And for sure, we are one of the older states. But hey, just a couple states over, Maine is older than us and pretty darn rural. I want to say that on a high level, we have no choice. We have to right price our system in order to bring down the costs of insurance. I just want to say again, I don't mean to give insurance companies a pass here. I'm in a role of being pretty critical of the business decisions of our insurance companies and of insurance companies across the country. Significantly, the costs of premiums relate directly to the cost of care.
This crisis in the affordability of premiums is one of several crises that we hear within the healthcare sector. The other that keeps coming up is the rural hospitals that are struggling and are at risk of closure. Just in the last month, we're seeing cutbacks in services, including the closure of the birthing center at Copley Hospital in Morrisville. Help us to understand how these stories are connected.
Well, interestingly, the decision makers at Copley portrayed that decision as a quality and liability story, not a cost story. But I understand your question. I think I've been saying for a while now that as we attempt to, I'll say again, right price our system, develop a system that Vermonters can actually pay for, there's going to be some tough choices to make. And either we do that in a really planful way, where we coordinate between hospital service areas, figure out what's the right services to be delivered here, in this corner of the state and that corner of the state, to make sure people can get the care they need as best as possible. Or the market's going to do that to us, as we put downward pressure on the cost of hospitals. And the market doesn't do it in a planful way. The market does it in a brutal way. And so, it's really on us to, and on the state and our state leaders, to do the work, to prepare Vermont hospitals for these tough decisions. I don't think the decision at Copley is a good example of that. I think that's an example of us not exactly not doing that.
So you're speaking about the need to plan and not just have the market come in and things just start falling apart. But some listeners will be thinking, well, we do plan. We have this thing called the Green Mountain Care Board. Isn't that what they're supposed to do? What has happened with them?
No, the Green Mountain Care Board is a regulator. They are the ones who are in this position of saying, how much can we reasonably ask Vermont families to be paying for premiums in such a way that doesn't have our insurance companies go broke? And how much do hospitals need to remain sustainable? I am pretty darn critical of the. I'm in a role where I comment every year. You can read the Healthcare Advocate's comments over the years. We've been on the record for years as being pretty critical of the decisions that have come from the Green Mountain Care Board. Recently, in the last 2 years, we have a board that is facing this problem, I believe, was facing this problem in a much more direct way. Having impossible decisions to make. I don't think the board members believe that the rates, the insurance rates that they approved this past year is affordable for Vermonters. But they faced a impossible reality of some real questions about our insurance company's sustainability too, which is another form of disaster. But I want to try and pivot, David, and come back a little bit to this moment that Erica describes, and just I want to recognize that Erica's story is a disastrous one, and one that she has unfortunately too much company. Too many Vermonters are facing a similar dynamic. But I also have to recognize that the loss of the enhanced tax credits, while disastrous, is not a complete elimination of the premium tax credits. For families that are at lower incomes, there are many, many Vermont families who will get substantial premium tax credits and be able to get very affordable plans. So I would miss the opportunity if I didn't at least note that, that if you're listening to this and you're thinking, man, I can't think about a, what did you say? $47,000. That doesn't, possibly work for me. I need to say really clearly, Erica has done a lot of work to understand how this plays out for her family. Call an office like my office, the Healthcare Advocate's office, or find supports from your, assisters, maybe at your provider, or, there's people around the state who can help you understand this, or call Vermont Health Connect to see how it plays out for your family. Some families will face this. I can't possibly pay for it, and I'm trying to figure out what I can do to protect myself if I go uninsured. And some families will see that there's good subsidies available to them, and it works for them.
So that is an important point that subsidies have not gone away for everyone, and the cliff, essentially, the dividing line is 400% of the federal poverty level, which is about $128,000 in income for a family of four. Is that right?
That's about right. I managed to not bring it in front of me, but yes, that's about
And
right.
so, if you have a household income below that level, what can you expect?
You can expect your costs to go up. If for households that are more in the 200% of the federal poverty range, I'm kicking myself. I don't have the numbers because who understands what 200% of the federal poverty range is? For families more in that range, they might not see an increase at all. There are continue to be good options available, but for many other families, they will see an increase. The enhanced tax credits reduced the family share for families between Medicaid, 138% of the federal poverty level and 400, and extended them above 400. So this new the you know we're going back to the world of the cliff at 400%, and that's the story that Erica is telling.
Erica, what did what are your thoughts?
I just would like to make the point that for 400% of the federal poverty level, which you just noted is about $120,000, those people are still looking at $47,000 of their healthcare expense. That is insane. That's all a little shy in. It's a little shy of half.
The other point, you're absolutely right, Erica. You're absolutely right. This is devastating and it's self-inflicted. And the majority in Congress think it's the right thing to do. So I'll place some blame there, David. The other thing I'll note as a general piece of information, and Erica, I don't know whether you entertain this, but as the healthcare advocate, I don't have a preference for one insurance company over the other. MVP and Blue Cross both provide very similar networks and very similar coverage, and in standard plan, the exact same coverage. Their prices are not the same. Blue Cross is significantly more expensive. And so it really makes sense for Vermonters to take a look at both insurance companies and see what the difference means for their family.
So, for people who are facing these staggering price hikes, Mike, first, what resources, what can they do? And second, as you look down the road at what is being discussed, and what do you hear in the way of solutions that are being discussed that maybe will have some bearing on what Vermonters are going through?
I guess I have to start with just an honoring that this is hard, and for the families that are in Erica's situation losing the tax credits, I wish I had better news. I wish I had any kind of hopefulness that the state, the value of the enhanced tax credits are in the range of $65 million for Vermont. And no surprise, our state is not poised to backfill that. I think we have to keep fighting for Congress to do the right thing and extend the tax credits. I don't have a lot of hopefulness that this Congress at this time is going to do that. I expect the enhanced tax credits to go away this year.
So, what happens if many people, many families like Erica's, drop their health insurance? And you were starting to hint at this before. What happens to the system?
Well, Erica described this in a very personal way, and I appreciate it. When you look across a population and you put more for health insurance and you put more economic pressure on them, people don't leave on average. Let me try and say that clearer. If you have a significant amount of healthcare needs that you're living with a chronic condition, you're getting ma it managed, you go regularly to the provider, you sort of really know what it means to not get the care you need. You don't have you're forced to do whatever you can to maintain your coverage, even if that means I don't know how I'm going to feed myself. You face situations like that, and so people on who are on the healthier side leave before people who are really oriented around their ongoing healthcare needs. And so what that means is that the average cost of the people who remain goes up, and that leads to higher premiums and more healthier people leaving. It's a cyclical. It is a spiral.
It sounds there is an unsettling feeling that I take away from what you're saying, that the safety net is unraveling. Where do you see this headed, Mike?
I want to say again that we are all dependent on this. I have employer-sponsored insurance. Through my wife. My hospital down the road is dependent on this financing system working. I have a lot of fear about what might be happening, but I also think the stakes are high enough that policymakers are going to have to do what it takes to keep our system together.
Erica, I want to give you the last word. And as we head towards the new year, which for you will be a year without health insurance, how will that change the way that you lead your life?
Well, David, I'm going to try to be really careful. And I'm not a risk taker, but I'll take less risks. Actually, I'll probably eat healthier. I mean, I eat pretty healthy, but I'll encourage my husband to get even healthier than we already are. That's the best we can do. And I, there's something about holding in the back of our mind that we don't have a safety net. So, hopefully that will inspire us to just be really thoughtful and careful. I don't know, it's kind of terrifying.
Yeah. Well, Erica Bronze and Mike Fisher, I want to thank you both for joining us on the Vermont Conversation.
Thank
Thank
you,
you, David.
David.
Erica Bronze is a self-employed Pilates teacher who lives with her husband and two children in Winooski. Michael Fisher is Vermont's chief healthcare advocate. That does it for this week's Vermont Conversation. I'm David Goodman. Thanks so much for listening.